Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's tax time, and as promised, we've brought back two local experts to help those of us who've put it off until the 11th hour. Mary McVicker is a tax manager with GBQ Partners, and she's representing the Ohio Society of CPAs today. Welcome back to the show, Mary.
Thank you. Good morning.
Also joining us is Bruce Gelsinger. He's the AARP Regional Tax Aid Leader, now in his ninth year of volunteering for the AARP Tax Aid Program. Welcome back to the show, Bruce.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Also, we have a question for our listeners. What's your last-minute tax filing question? 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Dan Fisher Facebook page. Do you have any last-minute questions, concerns about filing your taxes this year, and also long-term, how to make it a little bit better next year? If you have any ideas or questions about that, give us a call or email us or contact us on Facebook. So, I always start out this program by saying, first of all, has anything changed in the past year that people should be aware of? Mary?
2011, if you're looking at your 2011 filings, you're not going to see too many changes. We're looking at the end of 2012 as being a huge change year. There were some things that have dropped off and haven't been extended yet through 2012. A few things that stayed on for 2011, but a little bit different. You know, the energy efficient improvement credits, they're still there, but they're not as favorable as they were in 2010. There's some limitations there. 2011, really, it's not too big of a change year, but there's always some movement. So
depends on where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Let's see. Bill and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you. Bought a property, actually a second home in Florida, took title to it in October and started running December 1st. What about the HOA and the property taxes and so forth? I use TurboTax, and it said you can, you got to break it down by rental versus non-rental. My question is, you have to use Schedule A for the ownership portion of the deduction, whereas you use, you know, another part of TurboTax for the actual rental. Can you assist on the Schedule A?
Schedule A, when you're looking at a second home, that's where Schedule A comes into play. So Schedule A is picking up all of your interest and real estate taxes that for a second residence. Schedule E is where you report rental income. So if you're looking at a breakout, you're going to have some Schedule E income where you're reporting the rental income from the property that's generated in 2011. If you've got personal use, that's where it starts getting tricky. There are limitations there, especially when it comes to rental activity that's generating a loss, because if you bought a property and you're putting it into service, then you've got other items too that would be like depreciation for, you know, non-cash items that are going to be deductible expenses. But you're limited because you're not, you know, if you're not in the business of renting, it's considered what the service would call a passive activity. So you've got limitations there. So I think there's probably a lot of details here.
What do you mean by the business of renting? Like somebody who owns an apartment complex?
Well, that's different from someone who just bought a home and is renting
right.
it out. It's like a passive activity too. That's not what, you know, if you're a wage earner, you've got another business that you go to day in, day out. Then rental losses, you know, that's, you're not a rental real estate advisor. You're not in the business of renting real estate. Then you've got limitations on your losses. So,
and
yeah, sure.
I'm a clarification though. You're right. I'm not rented out for business. We bought the place. It happened to sit there for a month or so, and we started renting for a couple, you know, for a long-term contract. We don't plan to go down there. So we're not in that business, but I'm having trouble finding the place on Schedule A for, so I can write off, you know, the HOA fees before I rent it.
What's HOA, first of all?
You cannot write off your homeowner association
right.
before you rent it, but after you start renting, then Schedule E would accept all those types of expenses on there, the homeowner's
right.
fees and taxes and any legal fees and so on and so forth.
But I could write off the property tax, for example.
The property tax on your personal ownership period
yes.
could go on Schedule A, and then when you rent it, that would go on Schedule E.
Right, exactly.
That portion
Schedule
of it.
A allows you real estate tax deduction for any property owned. There are limits if you had to take out, you know, a mortgage on that second property. There are mortgage interest limitations, but personal only Schedule A. Schedule E is business.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Bill, take care. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you're just joining us, Bruce Gelsinger of AARP, he's been volunteering for 9 years with the AARP Tax Aid Program, is with us. And also Mary McVicker, she's a tax manager with GBQ Partners. She's representing the Ohio Society of CPAs today. If you have a question, last-minute tax question, or a question looking forward for 2012, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Michael in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Michael.
And thank you. What a timely show.
Yes, it is. We do that on purpose.
I have a two-part question. The first part, I think, is pretty straightforward and not too esoteric. It's you inherit something in the mutual fund. It has dropped, let's just come up with a figure of $5,000. Is it up to $3,000 or $3,500 that you can claim as loss? I heard both figures.
Are you talking about when you've got
a sale?
When you have a sale of like capital loss, you get to take a $3,000.
$3,000. So it's not $3,500. I'd heard that it went up to $3,500.
No, it's $3,000 if you are a single taxpayer or married filing joint. If you're married filing separately, you'd split it $1,500 each. But $3,000 is the annual loss limit.
Okay.
Now that's the maximum loss. You could offset any gains you have against that too, and still take your $3,000.
Exactly.
Say that again. You can,
if you have gains other places, you could offset the gains and the losses up to the extent of the gains, and then take an additional $3,000 on your losses.
The only
In other words, I have to, like, if it's $5,000, I can do $3,000 this year and $2,000 the next.
Yes,
it carries.
You're saying
forward.
I could also do $2,000 against the gains, and then an additional $3,000 this year.
If you have $2,000 worth of gains,
right.
That's correct.
Yeah, I don't, but that's great. Okay, so the second part of the question is a little more complicated. It's an inherited investment where each of us have a loss of about $7,000, but we opted to distribute the inheritance over 5 years for tax purposes. And so then we were advised that possibly you can't take that loss until that estate is closed. Is that correct? In other words,
the disbursements are completed.
Right. In other words, we did cash in the one that had the loss. In other words, let's say there were three annuities. The one annuity was stock or mutual funds. There was a definite loss that has been cashed out. But we were told that we really can't take that loss until the entire estate is closed out because we opted for that 5 years.
Okay. Let's see.
Is that true or not?
Thoughts?
I know that's very esoteric.
Yeah, that's not something I'm not right in my realm that I've dealt with, to be quite honest. So I'm not sure I can give opine too much on that as far as the 5 years.
My one sister took the claim, and then when the sister that lived down in Florida and is handling the estate was advised that, you know, you might not be able to do that until the whole estate is closed out. In other words, the other two
branches. I would suggest go back and consult the financial advisor on that.
Yeah.
And what specific estate tax or what?
Just a tax.
Well, I guess who would, I guess.
By the way, I've had really good luck actually calling the 800 number. Will they do something?
Well, they've really beefed that up, the IRS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I'm serious. Over
they've been working hard.
Advice.
Yeah, they've been working. We had an IRS person scheduled for today, but she couldn't make it. But
cool.
They've really improved their services, from what I understand. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so do you recommend anyone locally? Or?
Well, we're not going to name names.
Okay.
No.
All right. Yellow Pages text.
Yeah. There we go.
1-800 help. 1-800 help. Okay, Michael.
No, it sounds so esoteric. I think I'll be dialing forever.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Now, they could have just left their inheritance, of course, to WOSU. A lot of people do that. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Gail in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I have a question pertaining to Social Security income. I was told by the guy who's done my taxes for years and years that at this time I don't earn enough on Social Security to even file a tax form, period. And I do have some investments, but they're in tax-exempt IRAs right now with Edward Jones. So I do have some tax-exempt investments, and the only other income that I have right now is a small inheritance that I got from my parents that I just got this past year of $7,000, and I put it in my bank account, savings and checking, just for emergency purposes.
Bruce Gelsinger?
Yes, you mentioned several things. Let me try to address them maybe in reverse order. First, inheritances are not taxable on the income tax. There may be an estate tax, but at a fairly modest amount, as you're saying, it's probably not. So that would not count. Whether you have to file a tax return is based on total income, not on Social Security income. Social Security might be a component of it, but it's also other income. And I don't know your exact situation, but for example, if you were single under 65 and you had less than $9,500 other income than your Social Security, you don't have to file a return. Doesn't matter how much your Social Security is. If you have a, you confused me a little bit by saying, I believe you had tax-exempt interest inside an IRA. Well, if you pull the money out of the IRA, then it's taxable. It doesn't matter what source generated it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I realize that. Yeah, no, this is all, everything, I haven't pulled anything out of the tax-exempt IRAs, and I do earn, I mean, besides that inheritance, I have no income except my Social Security, and that's what I was told, that I don't even have to worry about filing a form since it was not.
If you do not have other income, then you don't have to file. The one warning I would say that if you owned a mutual fund or a bond and sold that, that needs to be reported just to close the loop, because there's a basis that has to be considered to determine how much of it's taxable.
Okay, Gail, thanks for that. Or Mary McVicker?
Oh, I was just going to say, and even if you don't necessarily have a filing requirement, you know, making the filing is not a bad idea. You know, that there are statute of limitations that, you know, if you don't have a filing, you don't have a statute. So if something was in the return, you know, it's not a bad idea to continue filing even if you don't have one. But there is a cost benefit analysis of that you need to consider.
Okay, Gail, thanks for the call. Take care. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll continue our conversation about last-minute tax tips from our experts, Bruce Gelsinger with the AARP Regional Tax Aid Program, and also Mary McVicker, tax manager with GBQ Partners. She's representing the Ohio Society of CPAs. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, $5 gas is the warning now. Gas prices are a big campaign issue already. We'll look for straight talk on the price of gas. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides today. 50 degrees in downtown Columbus with some light rain. Showers off and on throughout the afternoon, a high of 63. Clouds tonight, a low of 36 degrees. Sunshine but cold on Tuesday, a high of just 46.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, helping to transform the lives of women and girls in Central Ohio. Presenting Whoopi Goldberg for the 2012 Keyholder event on June 29th at Nationwide Arena. Tickets at Ticketmaster.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We We are talking about something maybe you don't want to think about right now, but it's there always. It's tax time. And we've brought back two local experts to help those of us who have put it off until the 11th hour. Not quite. I think they're due. I said the top of the hour, I said they were due on Monday, but I was wrong. They're due on Tuesday, 2 days after. So tax April 15th falls on Sunday this year. But because there's a holiday in Washington, the world comes to a screeching halt, and it isn't until the next day that the taxes are due. So you have a little bit of extra time this year. It's time to celebrate. If you have any questions and want any help with some last-minute issues, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we're always trolling the Facebook page as well. If you have a question or comment, you want to pop in there. Joy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Joy.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Want to know how to use AARP to do my taxes?
Okay. We're going to post a link on our website, but, you know, why don't you tell us, Bruce?
Well, the IRS has several volunteer programs. AARP is one of them, and there's others, too. And you can access them by going to the IRS website or AARP website and putting in your zip code, and you can find a site near you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck. 614-292-8513. We'll post those website links on our website at wosu.org/allsides. And if you think that our lines are all filled up, you couldn't be more wrong. There are no calls waiting. So this is a good time if you have a question. So let's look. What can people be, you know, for those among us who have filed their taxes and are, or have already maybe even spent their refund or scraped up enough money to pay the extra that was due, what can we be doing going forward? Should we relax for a few months or what?
Well, I think there's a tendency for a lot of people to say, well, I've filed my taxes. Now I'm going to wait another 8 months or 9 months until February and think about it again. And really, there's some planning that could be done now. Making sure you collect your receipts, very good, especially if it's if you're going to itemize deductions on Schedule A, that sort of thing. If you owed a lot of dollars this year or you got a lot of dollars refund, I would recommend that you look at altering your withholdings. If you're employed, you can do that by going to your employer and asking to change your withholdings. If you're receiving an annuity or retirement income, you could also file a W-4P form there. If those don't pan out, you could also make quarterly estimated tax payments if you owed money last year and want to avoid the penalty at the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah, to follow up on that, I think the withholdings is a really important key. You know, quarterly estimates are paid in, you know, obviously each quarter based on your projected income. But one way to get around, you know, to do it differently is through withholdings, which are treated as paid ratably throughout the year. So truing up your withholdings to cover, you know, estimated tax is more beneficial in a way than paying in, you know, writing checks each quarter. So if you're in a position where you can do that to cover, you know, unearned income or to cover the gap with your earned income, that's you know, a good thing to do, a good strategy. Other things I would do, you know, charitables can be made anytime throughout the year, but make sure that you're maintaining documentation on that. Make sure all of your business receipts are lined up. Things to look at, you know, your retirement, if you need to make contributions or distributions, getting a better key on that. And then things even too, like from an Ohio play, 529 plans, setting up, you know, any type of 529 plan to give you a small deduction, but it's still, you know, a vehicle that does have some tax savings. To have a 529 plan in place here in Ohio.
If somebody has donated something, say, to the Ohio Historical Society, and the Ohio Historical Society said you have to get your own appraiser to appraise the value of it, and you don't do it in the year that you made the donation, can you ever get the benefit of that? So you don't do it, you donated it in 2010, you don't get it appraised until 2011. So you can't.
It depends how it's treated on 2010 return, I guess.
Okay.
If you have not counted on there, but it was a major donation, then it would qualify for the itemized deductions. You can always go back and file an amended return with that correct information
okay.
on there.
Yeah, but I would think the difficult part of that is, you know, you're getting an appraisal done at the date of donation. So it would be key to have that done.
The value could change, that kind of a thing?
Right.
Okay. The date of donation is important, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Paul in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Yes, I was wondering. I'm a public employee, and my medical insurance and prescription coverage is deducted from my check. Is that deductible on Schedule A?
Yes, it is. Any medical insurance premiums are deductible on Schedule A, assuming you have enough to trigger use of the Schedule A, and even if you don't overall, if those medical expenses, out-of-pocket costs, including insurance costs, if they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, that may also benefit you in Ohio, even if you don't have the rest of the contributions and rest of the items on Schedule A for the federal return.
It's the key is triggering getting over 7.5% of AGI. If you're not incurring a lot of medical expenses, you may not see the deduction for it from a federal standpoint.
Does that help, Paul?
Okay, it's only the amount over 7.5% then.
That's what qualifies. You have to reflect everything on there, out-of-pocket medical expenses, which would include eyeglasses and dentist, as well as regular medical, out-of-pocket prescription expenses, insurance policies related to health care. They would all count towards medical.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, take care, Paul. Sarah in Dayton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I was wondering if you would explain earned income tax credit and the perimeters and who it covers.
The earned income tax credit is meant to provide assistance to low-income families, especially with kids, but not necessarily with kids. It's a sliding scale that's calculated on what your income is, what your earned income is, and some other factors to determine. Once you're over 65 with no kids, there is no earned income tax credit. You've got to be younger than that.
Uh-huh.
But if you have kids at any age over, well, I guess if you have kids and your income is in a certain range, then you might qualify for that.
Is the range always the same?
No, it varies year to year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay.
It's inflation adjusted and it changes based on how many children as well. Kind of a moving target every year.
If you're between 26 and 65, I believe it is, and no children, you may qualify at a very low income level. And then there's different levels if you have 1, 2, and 3 or more children.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Sarah.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye. We have an email from Rodney. If you'd like to send us an email with your question, send it to allsides@wosu.org. You can also give us a call. 614-292-8513, and you can go to our Facebook page. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we're talking about last-minute tax tips. So if you have a question, give us a call, send us an email, go on Facebook. And our email from Rodney says, my son is active Navy, stationed in Bethesda, Maryland, and has not had a chance to send us his W-2s or we send him the state forms. We know that he will end up not owing any state taxes this year. Can he wait to file state income taxes, or is there somewhere he can go online to file for free? What should he do? Mary?
As far as waiting to file, he can wait to file, but he would need, you would need to go ahead and do an extension. Now, an extension, you'd have to do a federal extension first, and that, to do a federal extension, that covers then your state extension, which means you could wait until, October 15th then to file your Ohio return. I have here, I was looking for it, I had information on who you can use for active military to do filings for you. You can also do a state extension on its own. It's just easier, I guess, with a federal extension. It automatically covers it. Bruce, do you have that information?
The key with the federal extension, and it's Form 4868, which would be filed for the federal extension, the key to that is that you are required to pay whatever taxes you think you will owe to the federal government when you file that extension form. It's an extension for filing. It's not an extension to pay your taxes. So you're going to fine-tune it, of course, when you calculate your return. But if you think you owe money to the federal government, that needs to be accompanied with the Form 4868 application.
And if you don't, you're charged interest on it.
Correct.
That's correct.
Yeah, an extension, as you said, it's just an extension of time, not an extension of payment. I did find it. Operation CPA is used for Ohio military servicemen and women who are deployed out of state. What I would recommend there is the Ohio Society of CPA, you know, using them as a contact to get that available resource for you. But, you know, that way the filing can be done.
Okay, and we'll try to hunt down that link, too, and put it on our website.
Mm-hmm. AARP also has about 6,000 sites across the country where we do taxes. At some of those sites, we do taxes for the military personnel as well, but not all of our counselors are trained to do that.
Dennis in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Yes, I was calling in regards to my wife received a 1099 for some work she'd done, and I was wondering about this City of Columbus tax. We file jointly, but I was wondering if we could file her separate for the 1099 amount that's not she works, so she has city taxes taken out of her regular job, but I was wondering about the small amount on the 1099. How do we treat that for the city?
Well, so the city taxation is looking at earned income. So 1099 is earned income. You know, so you're not looking at interest and dividends, but you're looking at wages, which should have full withholding at the 2.5% Columbus tax rate. So I think that's what you're saying as far as she has, you know, wages that she's earning, and that's been withheld. What hasn't been withheld then is your business income, Schedule C income, as we call it, because it's where you're reporting that 1099 income. That gets reported to the City of Columbus as well. So whatever income she had there, if she had any expenses to offset it, that would go as 2.5%. Now, there wouldn't be, not that you could, you know, if you're filing jointly, your City of Columbus return, you know, it's still going to pick up. It's a straight 2.5%. There's no play there, you know, between a joint and separate. It's still picking up all of that income at 2.5%. So really, it's a City of Columbus. You'll have to report that there.
Does that help, Dennis?
One other quick. Can I file her separately with the city? You know, I never had to file with the city before. This is her first year doing this. Can she just file separately for that small amount on the 1099, or do we have to file jointly?
You know, to be quite honest, I'm not sure. I don't think you can make that play there with the city, but what the thing is, anyway, it's not going to change the tax.
Doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, so, you know, filing jointly, because you filed your federal jointly, that, you know, if City of Columbus allows that, the separate versus jointly, it doesn't change your tax.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Dennis, take care.
Thank you.
You bet. 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to get some last-minute tax filing advice. Larry in Alliance. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Okay. All right, Dennis, take care. Thank you.
Hello?
Hi, Larry, you need to turn down your radio.
It's down.
Okay. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Larry. No? Hey, Larry, your radio is still on. I can hear it.
There's off.
There you go. Welcome to the show.
Oh, okay.
No.
It's supposed to be off. Okay, there's off.
Okay.
It's about oil and gas leases.
Okay.
They're getting paid $4,000 or $5,000 an acre, and they don't have a monthly plan. You get one payment. You get a large amount all at one time.
Okay.
And, you know, it's going to be a big difference in a landowner's income. We're not used to having a lot of money. You just have to pay all the tax on it or what?
All right. Well, let's see. Let's see what they say.
Okay. Yes, you do have to pay tax on it. That might be one of those situations where you have income and no withholding to support the tax, and you might need to adjust your withholding on some other income stream or make quarterly tax payments if you have an anticipation what that income will be. The royalty income for oil and gas lease would be reported on Schedule E.
Okay. Anything to add? Larry, thanks for the call. Bill in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Yes. My question about the advice you gave the first caller, I bring through my mind, if he had bought that house strictly as an investment property, would it have been treated differently than the way you talked about being a second personal home?
Well, if it was an investment property, what you would have is you'd have everything going into the basis of the investment property, so that what you're doing is then selling, you know, you'd have, you'd be selling it later down the road. But as a second home, you would be, as a second home, you still, you're still taking the real estate taxes and the interest. So, you know, really the basis of it, you're still tracking it, but, as investment vehicle versus a rental property, I'm not sure that there's too much difference there.
I would agree there's not much difference there, and it really depends on what your use for the home is. If you buy it in one use and switch it to the other use, then you have to adjust your records and accounting for it in taxes.
Okay, I follow that. But like you said, things would have to be allocated from date of purchase to where he rented it. And what went through my head was, are they immediately allocated to the investment property at the time of purchase, if that's what the way you're treating the property, you're intending to rent it?
It's actually when that rental starts versus when you personally owned it or personally occupied it.
Whether you intend it to be rented or not.
Right. It's when that rental status changes.
Okay. That clears up my question.
Okay. Bill, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. We're talking about last-minute tax tips. You have any questions? Maybe you're looking forward. You're thinking ahead, and you want to know how to plan for that. Give us a call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have lots of lines open, and about 20 minutes. So make your call or give us an email, and we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life here with very exciting news, which is we're going to do an episode of our show on stage and beam it live to movie theaters all across the country. It includes Mike Birbiglia.
I got to get me some of that.
David Rakoff.
I won't truly love television until I love myself.
OK Go. And more Thursday, May 10th. Find a theater near you. Go to thisamericanlife.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us, and stay right here in 20 minutes for fresh air beginning at noon. And here's your opportunity to win the new iPad and support 89.7 NPR News. Our spring membership drive begins soon, and by becoming a sustaining member early, you'll be automatically entered to win the new iPad. Visit WOSU.org now, make your sustaining gift, and get registered. No pledge is necessary, but your support will continue to pay for the programs you enjoy. Entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. Thanks for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
A chance of rain today, mainly this afternoon. Cloudy skies, a high of 63. Clouds tonight, a low of 36. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about last-minute tax tips. If you have a question to prepare your taxes this year, or a question about how to prepare yourself for next year, put yourself in better situation by this time next year, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, as did Lou. She writes, or he writes, we purchased a 5-acre vacant lot in 2003 and sold it in 2010, still vacant, and earned a profit. When reporting the sale / capital gains to the IRS, how do I figure out the cost basis of the property? I know we can deduct some expenses for the sale, but I'm not sure which ones we can deduct. Mary McVicker?
Well, if you had a HUD statement from the sale, that would give you some keys to some of the expenses there. Your cost basis is basically everything that went into the property, you know, since your date of purchase. So your initial, you know, cost basis is what you bought for it, and then anything that went in, you know, as the property, if you didn't rent it, things like that, anything that went in after that, you know, as additions to the property, things like that that enhance the value of the property, those would be things. And then when you go to sell it, you've got the proceeds, but then you know you're going to have some costs there too, as far as settlement costs, things like that.
And that's all deductible as well.
And that would go against, yeah, the okay. settlement fees would go against the proceeds that you'd recognize mm-hmm. there. But I would think the HUD statement should help with that information and the information at the sale date.
Rose, on the east side, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rose.
Yes, I would like for somebody on the panel to explain to me why the cutoff rate for the earned income tax credit is 55 years old. Because I was able to get it this year because I've only been working on this job about a year. And I'm just barely making a minimum wage, so I was able to get it this year, but I'll be 55 in June. And they said the earned income tax credit will be cutoff date is 55 years.
Yeah, what's is it just arbitrary?
No, it's with no children, you can have earned income credit up to age 65.
Okay, so Rose,
mm-hmm. children.
You don't have any children?
No, I don't.
Yeah, okay. That's the key.
Then you would still be eligible based on age. It would depend on your income level.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So I would, if I had children, I wouldn't be able to get it. But if I don't have children, I would still be able to get it?
No, if you had children.
Then you can still get it with children, too. But like I said, it's a sliding scale. It's not a hard and fast number. But a single taxpayer or one without children up to age 65 may still qualify for that credit. Mm-hmm.
And it also depends on the rate of inflation.
Yeah, I mean the numbers change every year. Right. It's everything's increasing slightly for inflation. But the key is, you know, that at the end of the year, if you're not over 65 and you're at least age 25, which I understand you're right there, you know, at 55, and you're not claimed as a dependent, things like that, then mm-hmm. then you may be eligible for the credit.
Okay.
With no children this year, the cutoff was $13,600 for a single taxpayer.
Okay, Rose?
I'm just barely making minimum wage, and that earned income tax credit, it made a big difference when I got my income tax.
Well, check and see whether you qualify for it.
Okay,
you
thanks
might.
A lot.
All right, take
I
care.
Appreciate
you bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Moving targets. Who needs them? Clint in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I work in Columbus and pay 2.5% city tax, but I live in Dublin and where it's 2%. I'm wondering if I get a refund.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
I think she said it all.
I think that.
I guess that's the answer.
Sorry.
You know, Ohio is one of few states that has municipal taxation, and there's a lot to be said about that. And there's a lot of work involved with city taxation, but the general guidelines here are you as being an employee, the employer must withhold based on where the business operates. You live in Dublin, so you're paying tax based on where you, as a taxpayer, reside. To the extent that, you know, you're covered, you're basically filing, to the extent Dublin gives you full credit, you're basically filing a Dublin return that's not going to have tax due on it. To the extent it was vice versa and you worked in Dublin and lived in Columbus, you'd basically have only paid in 2%, so you'd have that 0.5% because Dublin's tax rate's a 2% rate versus Columbus's 2.5%. So city taxation is a little strange because then you even have cities where you don't get full credit based on where you live. You know, you don't get full credit for the tax withheld. But you know, there's not really a play there to go back and get that because you're not a resident of Columbus, so you're not going to be filing a Columbus return and getting that refund.
Okay. Good luck, Clint.
Thank you.
You bet. We are talking about last-minute tax strategies, tax filing strategies. If you have a question, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.com. www.thefirstmortgage.org. And Chuck in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Chuck.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 59, and I lost my job last year, but I have some money set aside, and I took all my money from my 401 and rolled into a rollover IRA. I won't get a pension for 4 years, so I'm basically be living off my savings, and I plan to withdraw about $30,000 a year from the rollover IRA when I turn 59 and a half. I'm wondering, do I need to make quarterly tax payments on that $30,000 or wait until the end of the year?
Many many brokerage accounts, banks, whoever you have your IRA with, will deduct at least federal tax from that amount. So that's probably a better way to go. And then each month or whenever you receive your distribution, some of the tax will be withheld. A few brokerage firms might not deduct the estate tax. So that's something to look at, too, whether you would have to file a quarterly state payment or whether the brokerage firm or your bank would also deduct the state withholding.
Why is there a penalty when you withdraw?
Well, you're actually waiting till you're 59 and a half so that you don't have the penalty.
Okay.
Is what I'm understanding the caller said, yes.
Okay.
So 59 and a half, I mean, it's basically, it's a vehicle to try to make and help you invest.
So force you to save.
Yeah. So it's a way of not pulling out what you've just put in to a vehicle, depending on how you have it structured, that might be completely tax deferred or that, you know, is providing you a tax advantage. But, you know, what Bruce said is absolutely right, that you would, you know, you could do withholdings through the actual amount that you're pulling out of the IRA. And I would definitely request that and speak to your advisor about that when you're setting that up. And remember, too, this first year is going to be a little bit strange, the first year that you do it, because if you paid in based on your prior year tax, then you've got some play there too as far as when you have to get that paid in if you do choose quarterly estimates. So there's a bit of a play there. I think the easiest way to go as far as managing it on your own would be through withholdings.
Okay. Chuck, thanks. Pam in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You want to know about that penalty.
Right, right. I just perfect segue into it. Many people have had to withdraw from their IRAs prior to 59 and a half due to job loss to meet their living expenses. So my question is there any legislation that's being considered for those who are in this situation to temporarily prevent this 10% penalty from from them having to pay this 10% penalty?
I thought I heard talk of it, but nothing's ever materialized that you know of.
It's very difficult for us to comment on what a pending legislation might be.
Right. That's what I thought.
Because it can go any way, regardless of what you heard. When you do take money out of an IRA or 401 before you're 59 and a half, yes, it is subject to a penalty in most cases, especially normal living expenses. There are a few exceptions to that.
Yeah, like
first-time home buyer, medical, school expenses, those types of things, so you could avoid the penalty. But if it's just for general living, the current law states there is a 10% penalty.
Okay, Pam, hang in there.
Thank you.
Yep, take care. We have an email from Steve. He writes, "We have not claimed our older son, now 26, as a dependent for several years because he has been working and on his own. He never went to college after high school. About 2 years ago, he finally decided he would go to college, and we have been paying tuition plus all his living expenses since then. In preparing this year's tax return for 2011, my wife believes that the wording for personal dependent would suggest that we may claim him as a dependent. This does not match what we have understood in the past. Can a returning student like our son become again a personal dependent for tax purposes? Is there an age limit in this regard?"
Yes, there is an age limit.
18?
I thought it was 24.
It's 24. Okay. For a full-time student. Over that, you make a good point, though. You're paying tuition. That tuition is deductible on the form.
Okay. Email from Kate. "I purchased a house in October 2011, but was unable to claim it due to it being purchased after June 2011. Will I be able to claim it on my 2012 taxes?" That sounds like she's saying two different things.
Sounds
there.
Like the home buyer's tax credit, I think, is which expired.
Yeah.
That has expired. Oh. That's no longer in place. So if she did not meet the original date, there is no revision to that at this point.
Right.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to Roger in Lancaster. Roger in Lancaster, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Roger.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yep, you're on the air.
All right. 10 years ago, my mother put her property in my name and my sister's name. She has gone into assisted living, and we sold the house last summer, and now we're going to deal with the income tax. Now, my sister and I plan on splitting the proceeds and each claiming half of it. I don't believe my mother paid any gift tax or anything when she deeded the property over to us. Does this now retroactively require some kind of a gift tax? And what do we do about knowing the basis of something she brought back in 1940 if we don't know it?
Well, the gift tax would have been done when the gift was made, unless it was a gift in a future interest. And this wasn't. This was a gift of, you know, her deeding over the property she had. Gift tax at that time, there would have been a step up to fair market value. So that would have been what the gift would have been at, is the fair market value of the property. So I would assume there should have been a valuation done at that time of the gift. And that would be your starting basis, you know, and then you have other things that may add to the basis, that anything you did to, you know, add value to the property, things like that, that have been put in by you. But
well, if she did not pay gift tax on it, and we don't know what the value was, then what all we know is the value we got out of it. What's the tax implication of that?
For your mother?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, she probably, even if, so you don't know if a gift tax return was filed, is what you've indicated. So, you know, the gift at the time should have been the fair market value. So that's, you know, the gift of it. Now, if a reporting was required, it would have reported it at that value. Now, the way gift tax works is you have a lifetime, you know, a lifetime exemption credit. So at the time, I can't remember when you said the value was, but, you know, for a long time, that lifetime exemption was $1 million. Right now, gift tax sits at $5 million a piece. I can gift up to $5 million before it becomes a tax. You know, it's a taxable gift, but it's applied against the credit, so there's no tax. You know, $5 million comes out of my estate without a gift tax, you know, penalty, you know, without a gift tax payment. So, you know, that's the approach that I would recommend. And you've got kind of a unique situation here, but the approach I would recommend is, you know, going back to get that fair market value. But the, you know, a gift tax filing should have been made to report that. Every year you can gift up to $13,000. To any individual without it being a taxable gift at all. That goes against your $5 million amount of taxable gifts allowed. So $13,000 a year goes against it. I don't know what the property is valued at, things like that, but that's your starting point.
Okay, Roger, thanks for the call. Anita in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Anita.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask, about four years ago, I paid... I noticed my company wasn't filing my Columbus taxes. So I went ahead and went through the effort of working with my company and working with the city of Columbus to make sure that tax got paid. Well, as soon as I did that, I got on their radar. So now every year I seem to, it's not necessarily, I don't know if it's an audit or what it is, but I get letters every year. Hey, you know, either you did pay or you, whatever. I just wonder, how long do I stay on the radar for the city of Columbus? Is it forever?
When you say your company, are you a wage earner? Are you getting a W-2 that there's not been withholdings on?
Yeah, it's confusing. I do get a W-2, but W-2 is the normal tax form, right?
That's what you would receive for wages. Yes, yes. Wages from an employer.
Okay, but I would travel quite a bit, so when I was traveling, they would pay tax in the municipality and state that I was traveling to. So, and then they would say, well, when you come back home, you're working from home, so we don't need to pay City of Columbus. Well, I was trying to tell them, no, I actually work in the office on the days I come back to Columbus, so you still need to pay City of Columbus taxes. That's how the confusion started. And maybe if I had left it alone, everything would have worked out okay, but I just felt like, okay, I want to do the right thing. And
you know,
I almost regret it now, but...
You know, what I would suggest is, you know, the municipalities, they have, you know, talking to them is pretty easy. City of Columbus, you know, has an office that has quite a few staff that are very knowledgeable. And you know, I would just recommend giving the City of Columbus Taxation Department a call and going through the situation and seeing what needs to be settled to, because, you know, notices from cities, once you start getting them, it is, I understand that it is, you know, it's a matter of, I think, communication. So the best thing you can do is probably, you know, proactively go forward to the City of Columbus and talk through the issue with them. Otherwise, it's hard to know when you're going to get a notice or not. But I know everyone, whenever they see tax on any type of mail that comes to them, it puts a little bit of a frenzy to your day. So maybe giving them a call first would help get away from that.
Thank you.
Okay, Anita, thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say.
Email from a listener. I'm looking for resources for people with low income on my taxes this year. I am trying to go to the AARP tax clinic at my library. As you can imagine, it is really packed. I also called Franklin County Legal Aid and had no luck. All of my income was on a 1099, and I am below $25,000. Suggestions would be most appreciated. Thank you for your help.
All of the tax aid sites, the AARP sites, some take appointments and others are walk-in sites. You might explore an appointment site, because there are sites now with appointments starting to free up this last week. Some sites are still very crowded, but others do have room. But if it's on a 1099, there will be a number of implications, and a tax return does need to be filed because a Social Security component or equivalent would need to be addressed on the tax return.
Okay, and we'll have those links on our website at wosu.org/allsides if you want to go there and check those out. Otherwise, all of that information would be at the local library as well.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure. We're running out of time. I want to quick squeeze Vivian in. So if they put her on, get her ready to be put on the air, we will, and then we'll be just about out of time. Let's see. Vivian, are you on there?
Yes.
Hi, Vivian.
I was wondering if the IRS compares 1 year to another of my tax returns, if they're looking at changes in my income or whatever.
Is Big Brother watching? Okay, Vivian, thanks.
The comparison that is especially done is a comparison of all your wage statements, whether W-2s, 1099, interest dividend statements, capital gains statements, that sort of thing. They are compared at the federal level. Whether it's a year-to-year comparison, that may not be as much in the forefront as comparing the current income to the documents that they have versus what you report on your return.
Okay. Yeah, matching errors are usually the first thing that get kicked off in notices from the IRS. You know, we have a 1099 that shows this. You haven't reported it. We don't see it. Things like that. Comparison year to year, that's hard to say because each taxpayer can be very different. And it'd be great if we could know. If we could know.
Well, Mary McVicker, thanks for sharing your knowledge today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mary McVicker is representing the Ohio Society of CPAs, and Bruce Gelsinger. Bruce, welcome. Thanks again, and as always, and see you in November.
Okay. I'll look forward to it.
Bruce is the AARP Regional Tax Aid Leader. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.